Proverbs 3, 5 through 8. This is from the King James Version. Trust in the Lord with all thine heart, and lean not unto thine own understanding. In all thy ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct thy paths. Be not wise in thine own eyes, fear the Lord, and depart from evil. It shall be health to thy navel and marrow to thy bones. Proverbs 3, 5 through 8 from the New Revised Standard Version. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and do not rely on your own insight. In all your ways acknowledge him, and he will make straight your paths. Do not be wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord and turn away from evil. It will be healing for your flesh and a refreshment for your body. From the Message. Trust God from the bottom of your heart. Don't try to figure out everything on your own. Listen for God's voice in everything you do, everywhere you go. He's the one who will keep you on track. Don't assume that you know it all. Run to God. Run from evil. Your body will glow with health, and your very bones will vibrate with life. Amen.
I've appreciated the songs that we sang today, highlighting how the Lord leads us in ways that we haven't expected, but we've been well aware of his presence in our lives. And the verses, Proverbs 3, 5 through 8, Proverbs 3, 5 through 6, have been my life verses, and they've been on my brain and in my heart. For many, many years, as I took those as a young man, not knowing where I was going or what I was going to do, but I wanted to do something significant. The journey of commitment is an interesting journey that all of us participate in. The word is simple. The concept is complex, with lots of different layers of meaning, many of which I have also experienced. I mean, I was a little league coach, and that requires a commitment of 2 or 3 hours, 3 times a week, plus game day, which is 3 or 4 hours. I taught Sunday school to first, second, and third graders, which was an incredibly challenging and intimidating thing for me. I'd much rather be in the jungle talking with guys with guns than trying to figure out how to communicate with little children. But the good news is I had 3 brothers, a set of twins, and an older brother, Matthew, Mark, and Luke. So that provided great encouragement for me. But my story really begins as a young man after college. The development of who I have become began much earlier than that. From my faith community and from my family. But I'm of the Vietnam generation, and some of you know that I served in Vietnam for 27 months as a conscientious objector, doing my 2 years of service to the country. And it's during that time that my life was dramatically turned around and changed. I'll give you what my life commitment has been, and then I want to talk a little bit about that impact on me and different pieces of that. So it was during that time that I began to understand and appreciate and want to serve people who are marginalized, who didn't have a voice, or whose voices were never heard or recognized. But I didn't really understand that for some time. And Vietnam totally changed my life, but I didn't know that, which leads me to my first observation. My life commitment came in unexpected ways and an unexpected time, and I embraced it. And my encouragement to all of us is be ready for the unexpected. Embrace it. Go with it. It will lead you places that you might not have ever even dreamed of going, and that was true for me. I came home from Vietnam thinking I wanted to do what I thought I wanted to do as a 20-year-old graduate of college. I wanted to teach psychology and work with students at the college level, so I went to graduate school to do that. And within the first year, it became very clear to me that that was no longer what was going to hold my attention. And so I finished a degree and changed my direction in life dramatically. In an unexpected way that I didn't even anticipate. Another piece of commitment that I've learned is that keeping a commitment is not always convenient. I remember missing holidays with my family when I was overseas, missing being with friends. Most of all, I remember when I worked for an organization that worked in communist-dominated countries or dictatorial places that were really unpleasant places to be, and being harassed by my fellow Americans for why would I want to support a communist country or why would I want to support a right-wing dictatorship, with them not understanding that that's not what I was there for. I was there to engage with those who didn't have a voice, who had been marginalized. That was inconvenient, but part of the gig of having a commitment. Stu Wilkitz is here today, and so he can relate to some of this with me, as we've had similar lives. And for us, commitment has also meant being in harm's way. I can remember in Vietnam not knowing a few times if I was going to see the light of day the next day. I remember sitting under a stairway in a house up in the mountains of Vietnam, where the North Vietnamese and the National Liberation Front, or Viet Cong as some were called, set up shop outside our house and shot their mortars over our house to the American base up the hill, and then all of full side coming back. That was an interesting evening. But what happened that time was, I'll never forget that my prayer was for the villagers who lived around us, who didn't have a stairway to hide under, as my teammate and I had. I remember in Uganda, driving across the country with an Anglican priest who we were working with doing some community development kinds of things, and coming into a village, and I noticed very quickly that all the doors were closed and the shutters were closed on the houses. And I said, "Pastor, this is a problem." And we came around the corner, and there was a line of soldiers with their rifles leveled at us. We stopped, needless to say. And we were put up against the car, spread-eagled. And I didn't know if we were going to make it out of there because the soldiers were drunk, and that's not always a good sign when you have drunk soldiers with loaded weapons aimed at you. And I really worried about my Ugandan pastor friend, because he was not of the same tribe, and they were really giving him a very, very bad time. All of a sudden, they said, "Go." So we got in the car and left. Those are moments that you don't forget, and commitment led me there. I'll never forget a few times in Somalia. It's the only place that I've actually heard bullets go past my head, and that's a wake-up call when you hear the whoosh, whoosh, whoosh of the bullets going past your head. And so these things, my commitment to working with people who were in those places led me into dangerous places. But I'm here to talk about it today. I was spared for whatever reason. There's also great joy and great meaning in a life of commitment, with great experiences. If I had been a college professor, I wouldn't have been able to sit in the living room with a queen and have a conversation with her in the Middle East for an evening. I wouldn't have been able to be an advisor to a prime minister in a country on refugee affairs. I wouldn't have found two of my children. One is from Bangladesh, one is from Ethiopia. So how joyful and great is that? So my life of commitment has given me great, great joy, along with some heartache and difficulties along the way. I have friends around the world. Stuart can relate to this. When my wife and I go to Somalia or to Uzbekistan from time to time, where she's from, I was the Peace Corps country director there. And the staff know that I'm coming, and they always get together, and we have a wonderful evening of laughing and remembering the good and the hard times together. But friendships develop in wonderful ways that I could never, ever have experienced or created or built on my own. And commitment for me led to a life calling. And so my story is not like many of yours. I totally understand that, and nor should it be. But for me, being called to work with and get to know and be with people who have been marginalized internationally, whose voices are not heard, most of the time they're not even recognized, has been a wonderful, wonderful experience for me in the difficult times and in the great times of joy. So it's brought great satisfaction that I could not have done on my own. And so I'm grateful for this journey of commitment that I've been blessed to have.
Last week, Pastor Mark introduced the new series of sharing by talking about how much trouble his iPhone had with the word covenant. I'm not surprised. What does a computer know about relationships? Relationships between God and God's people. Relationships between people with God as an interested partner. But this week, we are sharing our stories about journey. I am convinced that all covenants involve journey in some fashion. However, not all journeys are covenantal. Two words can be used to describe every step of the way. The words are risk and joy. And I think Fred's story, it's hard to follow Fred's story, but I will try. How much risk and how much joy are there on this path that has been taken? I was an engineer with my own business. Back in 2003, I was responsible for 6 full-time employees and 1 or 2 more during the summers. Only one had a college degree. A couple had GEDs. I paid living wages and provided complete company health insurance coverage. Our business was small. Karen and I ran the business as a mom-and-pop shop. Our employees were family. The employees were dedicated, even to the point of working full night shifts when needed after they've completed their day shifts. When business was good, it was easy to pay the bills. But when business started to slow down, money got tighter. Surplus reserve funds were tapped to pay current bills and payrolls. For me, one doesn't harm people, and my employees were part of my family. And now this chapter of my journey begins with the 2006-2007 recession. Risk of financial insecurity was high. Joy, if any, seemed bewildering, absent in my mind. I can recall the day-to-day stress. However, it would take me some time and the use of hindsight vision to see more signs of the joy during this time. The government gave the banks extra funds in order to keep credit circulating in the private sector. My clients, who were developers, discovered that not only did the banks withhold funds from starting any new projects, the banks also changed the rules for those projects that were already started. The banks made a business decision and sat on the money that they were supposed to circulate. Clients weren't getting money, so the suppliers down the supply chain, like us, also weren't getting our money. The writing on the wall was, for me, was, so to speak. The businessman in me knew that the thing to do was to cut my losses, lay off my employees immediately in 2006, weather through the storm, and sit on whatever money I had, which wasn't much. But the Christian in me said that such a decision should not be taken in haste. Think about how this decision would affect my employees. I remember praying a lot to God during these times, searching for pathways and answers, ending most of my prayers with thankfulness for what I did have, and thanking Jesus for showing me how to be closer to God. Scripture helped, especially Matthew 6:28. And why do you worry about clothes? See how the lilies of the field grow. Do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will worry about itself. Each day has enough trouble of its own. And Ecclesiastes 5:2, do not be hasty in your heart. So my decision was made to keep the employees on the payroll as long as possible to give them the time necessary to find other jobs. This decision meant that Karen and I had less money to rely upon for ourselves, for our future. Financial risk and insecurity remained high. However, I could also begin to feel some signs of joy that effectively counteracted the risk. My employees found other work and did not leave in bitterness. Troubles weren't over for Karen and me. We lost our house and much of our retirement savings in order to maintain the business and the payroll. We would have lost the house anyway, sooner or later. Throughout these troubles, family and Reedwood community supported us where they could, and Karen and I greatly appreciated the support. The high cost of living here in Portland forced us to move to McMinnville, and sadly, we lost touch with much of our Reedwood family. Reedwood was also experiencing trials and tribulations during these times, and Reedwood was in our prayers. Luckily, after 2 years in McMinnville, an opportunity presented itself, and we were available to be at the right place at the right time. We found a manufactured home for sale in a reputable senior living park in Newburgh, close enough to Reedwood to attend Sunday worship. We are thankful for a roof over our head, the food on our plates, and the gas in the gas tank. We're also thankful that Reedwood, too, has also turned a new chapter in their journey as well. I sense more joy for the future and less risk for all of us. Our journeys still lie before us, and with God's help, everything will turn out okay. I have a new understanding and appreciation with what Charles Dickens said. It was the best of times, it was the worst of times. After my life here is over, and I meet Jesus at the gates, if it becomes so, I hope I hear Jesus say, "Nicely done, good friend."
When Dwight asked me to speak a few weeks ago, I've thought a lot. When Dwight asked me to speak a few weeks ago, it made me do a lot of reflection. And plus, my niece was here, and we were going over family history and that kind of stuff. So here we go. Now I lay me down to sleep, I pray the Lord my soul to keep. If I should die before I wake, I pray the Lord my soul to take. God bless Mom, Dad, Bob, Joe, Grandpa and Grandma, and other requests. This is a prayer that I said for years at bedtime with my parents. It was the way I started my life. I had godly grandparents, Frank and Zoe Neely, that they were Methodists, and then Ernie and Elsie Hadlock, that were Quakers, that lived in Seattle. My mom and dad, Clyde and Nedra Hadlock. We went to Holly Park Friends Church in Seattle, and like Sherry was commenting last week, Sunday school, church, Sunday night evening service, Wednesday night prayer meeting. We were real involved in all that. There were people in the church, that families that you could count on. It was a community where you felt loved. The first pastor that I remember was Howard and Beth Harmon. Probably a lot of you know them. We met in a church, a building where the church was in the basement and the pastors lived upstairs when we started. And through work and that kind of thing, we got money for a new church and built a new building. In summers, I went to summer camp at Wanamere, which was on Puget Sound. We'd have family camp at Quaker Cove in the fall. My grandparents owned a cabin there, and so we spent a lot of time there. I had a brother, Bob, who was a year and a half older than me. I was the middle child. And then my younger brother, Joe, was 5 years younger. When I was in junior high and high school in Seattle, Muriel and Ernie Ostrin were the youth sponsors, and they were very involved with us. We had Bible studies, we did water skiing, we did work projects. It was a very good time. And Muriel... both my dad and my grandpa had graduated from college, but none of the women in my family, and they were kind of thinking that women didn't need to go to college. And Muriel encouraged me to pursue going to college, and my parents. And so it started out with 1 year, but I was able to go all 4 years and graduate with a degree in psychology and sociology. I had a real interest in working with teenagers. And so I got a job at Albertina Kerr after I graduated from college. And I felt like that was a calling and a mission to work with the young women who were troubled with emotional problems and family problems. My brother, he was very involved in my life, and so I can't talk without including him some. Anyway, he also worked with teenagers, but he worked with Youth for Christ for a number of years. After I attended Linwood Friends Church, and Jerry and I actually got married there. After I quit doing social work, I went to work for Montgomery Wards in Northwest Portland in that old building that you see. Jerry and I got married, and at that time, then I became mom to Mark and Doug. Doug was 12 and Mark was 16. In preparing what I was going to say today, I kind of tried to think about, I've had a lot of ups and downs in my life, but one of the things that blessed me a lot was going to Bible Study Fellowship. It's a very structured program, and when I started, I thought, oh, is this all necessary, you know, some of these rules and regulations? But the format was that you would receive questions, you'd go home and you'd work on them on a daily basis all week long, and then you'd come back the next week, and you were in a small group that stayed consistent. And in that group, you would discuss your answers to the questions that you'd worked on all week. And then after the little group discussion, you would have a lecture, and then you'd go home with notes, lessons that covered what you'd been studying. But in that process, you got to see how other people, their learning process too with scriptures. A part of that program was from Matthew 7:7, ask and it will be given to you, seek and you will find, knock and the door will be opened to you. So as that ask was a definite part of the Bible study, and as a group you would write down your specific prayer request. This is in a small group of 8 to 12 women. This was a women's Bible study. And you'd pray for each other. And then when you'd have, once a month, you'd have a social time. And then you could share what you've been learning and how those prayer requests had been answered. Most of you, maybe some of you don't know, but most of you know that in 2008, Jerry had colon cancer, and we went through quite a bit, and he died in February of 2016. But I've already shared about that in the past, so I'm not going to go into that today. But my relation with Christ helps strengthen me to deal with all the medical issues. And then this last year, my good friend and neighbor, Diane, had brain tumor, and she died in May. Anyway, I want to read from Scripture. It's Colossians 1, 9, and 10. And this is my prayer request for myself and for you.
Mm-hmm.